This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. In light of the floods that devastated states across the peninsula over the weekend, we're revisiting some of our previous shows where we looked at the health risks faced by people who have been affected. Particularly now, we want to look at the toll on the emotional and psychological well-being of the affected communities from having lost their homes and possessions, their livelihoods, and in some instances, even losing their loved ones. So in this previous interview with consultant psychiatrist Dr. Philip George, we spoke about how to provide psychological first aid after such a disaster. Here's Meera Sivasoli asking about immediate steps that can be taken on the ground.
And what would psychiatrists like yourself do on the ground?
Yeah, well, the first most important thing would be to get an understanding about the situation. Information is really essential to survivors. They need to know what's available, what's there, what's happening, how safe they are. You know, there's some really important issues that they want to know. And so we need to be part of a team that's briefed and debriefed every day. We need to know the details about what's available. When will food be delivered? When do the tents come? When do, you know, maybe people can go back to their homes? When can they recover some of their personal belongings? So details like that are essential for the psychological team to understand and know, to be able to provide the information. The next would be contact and engagement. And it's not going out to everyone. Not everyone has a psychological reaction to a disaster. Some people are pretty resilient and they can cope perhaps, maybe initially, but you know, there has to be continuity and they can still reach out when they, you know, when they feel that they are getting a little undone. Mm-hmm. But there are some people who are obviously in need of psychological assistance. And so that's when contact and engagement would be essential.
What are common reactions and responses to disasters generally?
Yeah, well, depending on the type of disaster, and I mean, if there are missing people, there can be grief. There can be, you know, worry about their safety. If people have perished or died, you know, there can be a grief, traumatic grief reaction. There can be also depression. There can be psychological symptoms like anger, frustration, and that can be even exhibited to, you know, relief workers, and you know, they're actually angry about what they've experienced, but they can actually vent it out on the people who are coming to support and help them. Mm-hmm. There can be poor coping mechanisms as well, and there can be, you know, anxiety symptoms and immense stress.
And so how would someone like you start to talk to people, or even encourage them to talk, or identify who really needs help?
Yeah. Well, first and foremost, it's about maybe, you know, having an appropriate observation, understanding what the needs are from afar, and then approaching people to, you know, to start to engage with them. The most important thing would be to find out what their immediate needs and concerns are. I remember I was in somewhere in Australia where they had bushfires, and there were people who, you know, were distraught about their homes being destroyed, and there was a whole psychological team there, and this was even before we knew anything about first aid and psychological help. And some of the people were furious. They were so angry that psychiatrists were coming up and, you know, and they were saying, "Do you think I'm mentally ill or something? You know, I've just had my house burned down. Why are you coming in my face?" And so it's about being appropriate and understanding what the issues and concerns are, and then providing them support if they need. So just being there is big enough. It's important enough. And some people find, you know, when they resolve some of the important big needs and concerns, then they want to talk to someone.
Okay. And the flood situation, for an example, what are some of the psychological first aid needs?
Yeah, so a lot of these services were provided at respite centers. So, you know, relief centers and where food and everything else is provided, and shelter is provided. And so they provided group support. They provide supports for children who, you know, were really confused about what was going on. And so they had a play area where children could actually sit and maybe even draw and, you know, bring out their grief and other emotions in their drawings or in their play. And so it has to be age specific in terms of what you provide in relief. And there was also one-to-one, you know, opportunities for people to talk about their concerns and feelings. And one of the usual things that people come to witness is, you know, somebody who's been really so distraught that they're disorientated. Mm-hmm. They're unsure what's actually happening. They're confused. And so it's psychological or mental health worker who can actually take them through the whole process, get them to sit down and, you know, talk to them about, you know, what they had just experienced and what their concerns are, and, you know, bring them to reality and help them to start to now cope.
And do children need special attention?
Absolutely. I mean, even in other disasters, and where disaster groups, you know, relief groups go, they always have to bring along things for children.
Yeah.
Some children have lost parents. Some children, are traumatized by what they experience. Some children have had physical trauma as well. And so they may be at more risk. And they need to have age-related activities that can actually help them through this as well.
Mm-hmm.
So often play and art therapy, a special area where they can be safe, with people who can actually relate to them in their same in their age-related language as well.
Yeah.
All this is essential for them to, you know, get better.
What might happen if one chooses not to discuss their feelings and issues at that time?
Yeah, well, my experience in Aceh, and this was a few years after the disaster, was, when they decided and realized that psychiatric and psychological help was really lacking and the psychological problems were on the increase. And a large part of the reason for the increase was because of the disaster. And that's the aftermath of not being able to psychologically overcome or be de-stressed about a disaster.
Mm.
So if there isn't appropriate psychological first aid, it can actually lead to long-standing issues and problems.
What's the objective of psychological first aid?
Well, first of all, to relieve people of the immediate psychological distress.
How do you do that?
Actually, just being there for them. Making them realize that there is a human contact, that there are people who are concerned, that there are people who really want to listen and, you know, help them. And it can be help in a material way, a physical way. It can be help through a psychological mean as well. And then giving them skills in dealing with their stress and, you know, their emotional turmoil. There are things that they can do to distract themselves.
Could you give me an example?
Yeah, I mean, a person who's really distressed about, you know, a disaster that's happened, and they could be screaming and shouting or, you know, wailing or crying, we can do what is termed as grounding. We can take them to tell them, okay, well, you know, grounding is going to help you take your mind off this and make you feel a bit more calm. It's not going to take away your problems, but it'll help you feel calm, and then slowly you can start to decide how to deal with your problems. And so then we can take them through breathing exercises and then getting them to not focus on the disaster, but to focus on the here and now. Look around the room. Look at something that's positive, like the color of the room, or, you know, the shoes that person is wearing, or the table that's on the side of the room. Focus on that, and then after a few minutes, do that breathing exercise again. So, you know, we repeat that with different stimuli, so that we bring them to the here and now and not make them, you know, still reminisce and still think about the trauma and, you know, the disaster and all the other things that come along with it.
Are you usually successful?
Yeah, for people who are able to engage in it, it is successful. It is helpful. but of course, it's not going to take away their problems. You need to then have other solutions and other issues and ways to resolve some of the things that they're concerned about and, you know, their needs and wants as well.
So you were going through the objectives. Any others?
Yes, yeah. Well, human connection is a real important thing. And it's going to be done in a non-intrusive and a compassionate manner. And it's going to be shown in your body language. And that's why usually it's mental health workers who are trained, because they deal with people who have, you know, serious psychological illnesses. And the only way they can link in with somebody with a serious psychological illness is if they have that experience and that knowledge about being compassionate and, you know, understanding. The second is, of course, safety. And that is, you know, the immediate and ongoing safety, because that's a real issue. A lot of people who may be in a relief center and worry, is this place going to get flooded now?
Yeah.
And they're going to be sleeping at night and then suddenly water gushes in. So providing physical and emotional comfort would be really essential. Calming and orientating people, because a lot of people, you know, when they go through the grief that you'd expect after a disaster, they can be quite disorientated. They're not sure what's happening, what's around them, what's going to happen after this. So providing information is really important for survivors as well. And then helping the survivors to tell you what their immediate needs are. So once you build a rapport, once you build that relationship, they can start to talk to you about their needs and their concerns. And then giving them practical assistance and information. It's also important to think about people who have been through the same disaster but are coping well, who can actually provide support for those who are not, because they experienced the same thing. And so they can actually be, you know, like somebody who can actually be mirrored, or, you know, the behavior that can be learned from the others who are not coping so well.
That was consultant psychiatrist Dr. Philip George from a previous interview on psychological first aid. And now a look back at an interview with Hegajivan Kurnas, Senior Assistant Director of the Pharmaceutical Services Program from the Ministry of Health, where he shared tips on ensuring that your supplies of medications are not disrupted if you have been affected by the floods. And these tips are useful even in the aftermath of the recent floods for communities in flood prone areas, as the monsoon season is not over yet, and you can still take steps to be prepared in the event of anything untoward happening. So again, here is Meera Sivasodhi speaking to Hegajivan Kurnas.
And on your end, from the Pharmaceutical Services Program, what do you actually do every year? And I'm sure you prepare for this all the time.
Okay, so we have what you call a plan. Okay, we have a plan, health workers, specifically on my part, the Pharmaceutical Services Division. We have medical teams, stationary and mobile medical teams, to actually help with the flood relief centers and also the flood victims in all affected areas. Okay, and in terms of the Ministry of Health's perspective, we will try to aid and help people who are suffering from, who are victims of floods, which have waterborne diseases, people who are suffering from drowning, burns, that everything that might happen during floods. So from the perspective of the Ministry of Health, this is what we do. We are always ready, but of course, we always hope for the best.
Yeah.
We always hope for nothing to happen.
The action plan is always there.
Yes, action plan has been there.
It's like all you need to do is instruct and it runs, because
yes,
you do this all the time.
Yes, exactly. And ever since the 2014 flood, the major flood in Kuala Krai, Kelantan districts, we have come up with an even more in-depth, sophisticated action plan. Which was the first edition was in 2016. It's called Pelan Pengurusan Krisis dan Bencana bagi Perkhidmatan Farmasi Only, but it of course encompasses the rest of the Ministry of Health.
Yeah, because in 2014, I remember, I mean, we had a whole load of food coming in and everything, but there was no access to these areas, and a lot of that just was lying all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure you've looked into access as well. How do you get into these areas in the event that the floods are really bad? You can't go by road or any other mode of transportation. So based on your experience, what are some of the common problems that people with chronic diseases, how do you prepare for that?
Okay, so the thing is, patients with chronic diseases, they will always have to be on their medications all the time. So the thing is, when these patients who are in flood-prone areas, when their places are hit with flood, okay, number one is that when they move, they tend to forget to bring their medicines because under stress and duress, they forget about their medicines. So their main concern is, our main concern is that these patients will somehow come non-compliant to the medicines, and they will result to non-controlled diseases. Their disease progression will get worse, mm-hmm. and this will affect their quality of life. And already you're moving to a flood relief center.
Absolutely. Yes. Could you give me some examples?
Okay, like for example, patients with diabetes and hypertension. So they have to take their medications daily, on a daily dosing basis. So let's just say that under like a stress and duress, the water comes in the middle of the night. They'll have to, immediately evacuate. And they bring all the essential items, but they forget their medicines. And then when they go to the flood relief centers, they will have to continue taking their dosage, otherwise their sugar readings will go up.
So how do you come in there?
Okay, so the thing is, every flood relief center, we have this medical team. Medical team are two types. One is the mobile unit and one is the station. One is the stationary unit. The stationary units are normally placed in these flood relief centers. They have a list of medications and available medications to actually help all the flood relief victims that come in. And even in the list of medications, we do cover for chronic diseases as well. Besides acute diseases, we do cover chronic diseases, which has diabetes, hypertension, as well as acute diseases, where we cover with antibiotics, you know, cough, flu, asthmatic medications also there regarding the chronic diseases.
Okay. So you get them all stocked up well in advance.
Yes, but the thing is, regarding stocked up well in advance, the thing is, we only can carry so much with us.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So that is why it's very important for the patient to actually bring their chronic medications with them. It is actually part of an essential item for them to bring it with them wherever they go when they move to flood relief centers, because we do not know how many chronic patients are going to be there. We do not know how many of them will have forgotten their medications and even their prescriptions. So we only can do so much to try to help them. And the thing is, we have very limited amount of medicine that we can carry with us. So we'll have to go back to the main health facility, okay, through boat or whatever route that is accessible, take more medicines and come back. And by that time, we do not know how long would it have been before the patients have gotten their medicines.
Can you share some stories with us where things have gone wrong?
For example, back in Kelantan, when our patients their medicine, they are kept in like lower areas of the house. So when the flood comes in, it takes away everything,
right.
medical records, the prescriptions, the health records, the medicines as well. And then when they go to the flood relief centers, okay, they do not remember their medicine names. They do not remember what they have. This is specifically like patients, like old patients, geriatric patients who do not know what they're having. So it's very hard for people there to diagnose what they have, to go through what they have. And the thing is, these days, patients recognize although most patients nowadays are educated, they recognize the medicines based on the name of the medicines and all that. But certain patients, they don't recognize the medicines like based on the chemical entity or even the brand name. They recognize based on shape and sizes and some even prices. How is a medical officer or a pharmacist supposed to identify that in a flood relief center filled with people and other patients as well?
Yeah. Because you got many families as well as the generics, got many, many types dosages, especially 50 mg, 120 mg, which one were you on, you know,
because
you don't even know.
Yes.
But what about besides chronic diseases, things like waterborne diseases? Mm-hmm. I think typhoid is one, leptospirosis is the other. Is that very common during a flood situation?
Yes. The thing is, during a flooding season, a lot of diseases become very common. A lot of diseases become very common. Like you said, leptospirosis is a rodent-borne disease. So we also have vector-borne diseases, which is like malaria and dengue. Mm-hmm. We also, like you said, we have typhoid, we have paratyphoid. But the most common one is tetanus. The thing is, tetanus, because the thing is, most of these actually diseases, one rodent and vector-borne disease, as usual, mosquito and also rodents because of the fecal matter. But the thing is, something like tetanus, because it is always transferred through the fecal-oral route, okay, it'll get washed up in the flood. So people who are actually exposed to flood water have high incidence of diseases. They also have high incidence of skin diseases And if you do have patients with, like for example, diabetic patients with foot ulcers, if they get exposed to this kind of water, it's a major complication.
Like double whammy.
Yes.
Oh dear. How do you manage all of that?
That's the job of the Ministry of Health to assess and treat.
We were talking about a first aid kit. I mean, if you could recommend a first aid kit for people with chronic diseases, for an example, those in these flood-prone areas in the east coast of Malaysia, to help them prepare for it, what would you recommend in that first aid kit?
Okay, so in terms of chronic diseases specifically, I would ask that family members and also patients with chronic diseases make sure that first aid kit, whether it is in or not, your chronic diseases medicines are inside there along with your prescription and your health records. That's number one, always.
Given that you know it's the monsoon season.
Yes, in the monsoon season, that has to be there. But in other things that we must ensure that the usual things, like let's just say you have an injury, you have a bandage, you have an iodine swab, you have an acriflavin lotion, you know, those kind of antiseptic disinfectants. You have hand sanitizers, you know, just in case. Because the thing is, when floods happen, we have a breakage of the sewage system. You know, it might get into the water system. And when that happens, water is not safe anymore. So it's important that every time you handle water, you must wash your hands properly. And if, let's just say, there's no proper water to wash your hands with, there must be hand sanitizers because you'll be handling food. And in case you're handling patients, you know, with wounds and all that, you need to have those kind of things. If your parents have, if your mom or your dad has
dressing to be done,
you know, you need those kind of disinfectants. It's very important, actually. So those are the things that you should have in your first aid kit. Other than that, the rest is normal. You can get a pretty basic first aid kit wherever you go, wherever you want to buy. But those essential medications must be inside there.
But how do you make sure that the medicines, the supply is sufficient during, you know, those times? I mean, you can never tell, right? You really have no idea.
Yes, exactly. The thing is, no, we might be in under 1 month supply. And 1 week before running out of supply, suddenly it's heavy rainfall and then floods. And then patients are running out of medicines and they can't get to their facilities because the routes are cut off. So there are ways to actually overcome the situation, because the Ministry of Health has made it easy for patients to actually obtain their supplies, especially in flood-prone areas. The facilities, the health facilities, the clinics and the hospital, the patients actually go and request for a follow-up date with the doctor that is only after the monsoon season is over.
And that can be a long time.
That can be a long time. And once they do that, normally the pharmacy departments will actually supply the patients with that much of medicines. And even if they don't, you can always request that I'm in a flood-prone area, so I need those medications that can last me during the duration of the floods, or if there might be any floods at all, and that can happen as well. There's also ways where, if let's just say you are moved to a flood relief center, and you are due to take your medicines on that particular time, you can always pass your prescription to the pharmacist or the assistant pharmacist that will be at this flood relief centers. They will go by boat to the nearest health facility and get for you your medicines according to your prescription. And in the case where you have lost your prescription, okay, you can always ask the doctor, medical officer that is present at the health facility, or a medical officer that is present in the nearest clinic. It might not be the clinic that you're going to, but the nearest clinic to actually, government clinics, to actually help you write a new prescription. In that prescription, we have actually a way to write it. We will normally write a flood victim or mangsa banjir, and we will give a maximum amount of medicines for 1 month. You know, so these are all the types of actually procedures and actions that we can take to ensure that patients who do not have access to their medicines or have lost their medicines, or their medicine have been destroyed by the flood, actually have continuous supply of medicines throughout.
What about medicine sharing? A lot of us love doing that.
Okay, now that is a very serious thing. Now, let's just say, in terms of flood aspects, actually in any aspect at all, patients should not share their medicines. Because the thing is, every patient, the medical treatment is catered for them, to their diseases, to their disease progression. You know, how bad are their diseases? So their medicines are going to be different. Their doses are going to be different. You know, so the thing is, it is very important that patients don't share their medicines, because you may never know, you might be underdosing or overdosing your friend or your family member, and that is actually a very bad situation. It's a medication error. you know.
So no, don't go there.
No, don't go there, never go there.
Don't share your medicines.
Yes.
And after the flood recedes, what do people do?
Okay, so after the flood recedes, the flood victims will actually go back to try to go back to their lifestyles, but of course it's going to take some adjustment period. In terms of medication-wise and disease-wise, the patients can always, if let's just say they do not have their full supply of medications, they can always go to the clinics in the nearest to them. It doesn't have to be the original clinics. Mm-hmm. Go see the medical officer see or prescribe you your medicines that you needed. If you have a prescription, that's even better, you know, so that we don't have to play the guessing game of what kind of medicines you're taking or what kind of diseases you have, because we have to diagnose you all over again.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what the people normally do. So other aspects as well, patients who actually go back to their houses, they must ensure that all types of possible diseases can be kept at bay. For example, vector-borne diseases, they need to make sure there's no puddle of water lying around the house where it can be breeding ground for mosquitoes. Rodent-borne diseases, when floods happen, a lot of the ecosystem has changed, the habitats have changed, rodents start going inside the house. So the handling of food must be proper. And also the thing is, we are not so sure whether the sewage system is repaired, the drainage system is repaired. So we do not know whether water contamination is there. So patients will have to ensure that the water is properly boiled, properly taken care of, and they must do those kind of things to ensure that their lives can go on as normal as they can go.
Okay, that's a tricky one, isn't it?
That's a tricky one. It's actually a lot of procedures involved. And I'm only speaking on the aspect of Ministry of Health, but there's so many other things that goes into actually going back to normal life for a patient.
So where do we get more information on, if you want to know more about the floods and preparation for it in terms of medicines and all of that? Is there a website?
Okay, so So the thing is, if you want to know more information regarding the floods, okay, the best if websites, there will be the Ministry of Health website. There will also be the pharmacy.gov.my website. There's also a call line to us regarding medications, okay, which is called the National Pharmacy Call Center. That's 1-800-886-722. Also, the thing is regarding the flood, whether your area is going to be affected by flood, whether your area is prone to flooding and those kind of information, it's better to ask the health districts of each state. Even the health facilities also can provide that kind of information. All they have to do is just go and approach them or even give them a call. Those are the ways.
Okay, be prepared for it. 1-800-886-722.
Yeah, and that is National Pharmacy Call Center, so regarding medications only.
Only medications.
That was Hege Jeevankarna, Senior Assistant Director from the Pharmaceutical Services Program at the Ministry of Health, from a previous interview on preparing for the floods, especially from the perspective of ensuring that your medication supply are not disrupted. You've been listening to Health and Living on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.